Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Casino City Gang, your podcast for all things gambling. It's Thursday, November 6th, and I am your host, Aaron Todd, and I'm coming to you live from Casino City's worldwide headquarters just outside of Boston. Joining me here, as always, in the broadcast booth is Casino City Associate Editor Dan Podheiser. How are you doing today, Dan?
I'm tired today. I got back on the basketball court for the first time in about 4 weeks, so it took a lot out of me this morning.
It will do that, indeed. Also joining us from 2 weeks in Europe, who is probably a little more tired than you, is Casino City Editor-in-Chief Vin Narayan. And Vin, how's it feel to be back stateside?
It feels jet-lagged is what it feels. But going on the basketball court never tires me because I just stand in the corner and jack threes.
Is that an effective strategy?
It is when they go in.
So you're basically saying you're Reggie Miller?
It's always good to have a big man who can stretch the floor.
I'm your classic stretch four.
Well, we have a great show for you today. We're going to be discussing all the election results from Tuesday night here in the United States. We'll also be discussing the Santa Isabel's Tribe to launch online. The Santa Isabel Tribe's move to launch online bingo in California through what's the website called again? It's Desert Rose Bingo. It is live and accepting real money wagers in California. And we'll also be making predictions for the World Series of Poker November 9. Vin and I will be out there next week for the Poker Hall of Fame induction and then also, obviously, to see the next world champion be crowned. And then, of course, we're going to end the show with our NFL picks. It wasn't pretty for me the last 2 weeks, Vin. You'll be happy to hear that you are now well ahead of me on the season. But we're going to start with election results. Let's start locally here in Massachusetts, where voters rejected a ballot question that would have overturned the state's gaming legislation, and it would have banned casinos. Obviously, the Gaming Commission here in Massachusetts has already granted 3 licenses, one to Steve Wynn to build in Everett, just outside of Boston, one to MGM to build in Springfield, and one to Penn National Gaming to build a slot parlor in Plainville. Obviously, big news for the gaming companies that want to get started on their properties. And the vote failed by a somewhat surprising margin, at least somewhat surprising to me. It was a 60-40 vote. Dan, as a Bay Stater, were you surprised the margin was as big as it? Were you as surprised as I was that the margin was that big?
It's hard to say, because if this vote had happened a year ago, I would not have been surprised. But and I don't think the question was never do Massachusetts voters want casino. It was a matter of, okay, is all this time and, you know, the lack of momentum going to hurt the vote? And it turns out that it didn't. Maybe it hurt it by a few percentage points. But, you know, at the end of the day, the proponents for wanting casino came out in full force on Tuesday and got the job done. So congratulations to Wynn and everybody else who won here in Massachusetts, and congratulations to us, because now we get to go to a Wynn casino nearby.
Vin, were you surprised at all by the vote? I know you're not a Massachusetts resident anymore, but you know, we thought that after the whole process, after the Gaming Commission took so long to get everything done, that this might be end up being the death knell for you know, the polling certainly wasn't showing that, but you know, 6 months ago, or however long ago that it was decided that this this referendum would go forward, you know, you and I both thought that this might end up being, you know, the end of casinos in Massachusetts.
Yeah, the short answer is I'm not surprised. The long answer is why. And I think so. What happened? What we experienced, you know, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, 6 months ago, was there are two dynamics at play, right? There's one is the general dynamic, and this has been true going back to 2008, that the state of Massachusetts as a whole has wanted casino gaming for quite some time. Then you go back to what's happened over the past couple of years, which is full force NIMBYism, not my backyard, which is as much as the state of casino wanted, state of Massachusetts wanted casinos. When it came to actually building it in their own cities, they didn't want it. They still wanted casinos in the state. They just didn't want it in their own city. And if you take a look at the passion that fueled the anti-casino vote, it wasn't votes against casinos per se. It was votes against building a casino in their own city. They were still okay with the state, with the concept. And so what we saw and felt 3 months ago and 6 months ago, and in fact, I think if the vote had been held 3 months ago and 6 months ago, the percentage would be a lot closer. I think you would have been maybe looking at a 55-45 or 52-48 because you were in the height of the frustration over the process. You were in the height of the frustration over the incompetence of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission. You were in the height in the passions of sort of the anti-casino vote being felt in the form of NIMBYism. And once you know, time had passed and, you know, the temperature sort of cooled on the issue, things reverted back to the norm. They regressed back to the mean, which was, yes, everyone in Massachusetts wanted casinos, just no one wanted it in their own city. Now that the license has been awarded, the locales have been known, everyone's like, all right, we're okay with this plan. So in the grand scheme of things, I think this is not a surprise at all. It just took the temperatures cooling a bit to come back and go back to the norm.
You mentioned, you know, the whole idea of not my backyard. One of the things that I thought was most interesting in analyzing the election data, the vote in Palmer, the vote in West Springfield, and I believe the vote in Milford, there were three communities which voted, or maybe it was Foxborough, I can't remember which one, but there were three communities which voted against having a casino in their community, who on this ballot question voted against the repeal. So in other words, they were voting that it was okay to go forward as a state, but that same town had voted against having a casino in their town. So I think that perfectly illustrates your point, Vin. And another, one of the things that I thought was most interesting was the advertising campaigns around this. Obviously, there was a ton more money behind the Vote No campaign, you know, that wanted to allow the casinos to move forward. You know, there's a lot of money in the casinos, and they were willing to spend it to make sure that the vote was going to go their way. So I didn't really see any anti-casino ads. But I thought that the advertising that the No campaign put forward was very effective. They used local people to talk about what it was going to mean to their community. You know, in Springfield, they had you know, people talk about the devastation of the tornadoes that hit there. I guess it was about, what, a year or 2 years ago, and how this would help, you know, continue the recovery from that, you know, tornadoes, which you don't see in Massachusetts. So people aren't really used to this idea of having a tornado hit in Massachusetts. So they talked about what it would mean to their communities, and they emphasized that, you know, hey, we voted in favor of this. So, you know, why would you – I mean, they didn't say it in kind of in-your-face terms, but they said, you know, why should our votes – be overturned by a statewide referendum when we already voted this at the town level and you know, in our city or our town said, let's go forward with this. And the one thing that I also thought was poignant was I talked to quite a few people about this. And I would say, honestly, more of the people that I know were voting in favor of the repeal as opposed to against it. You know, my sort of non-gambling friends are, you know, a little – many of them have the same sort of, you know, as Barney Frank talked about, the sort of puritanical gambling is bad and we need to protect people from it sort of attitude. But they weren't really passionate about it. They weren't like, you know, they're like, oh, I'm probably going to vote to repeal, but, you know, I don't really have a huge thing against casinos. I just think that they're stupid. And that was their reasoning, but no one was like super, super fired up about it. So in the end, I'm not very surprised that it didn't, that, you know, that the repeal failed, but I am still a little little surprised that it was a 20% margin.
Well, yeah, the other thing too is, you know, anytime that you want to get momentum for your campaign, you release polls or you release quote unquote data that says it's a really close race and that we really need to get people out to vote. And so even though this, like, I'm really not all that surprised because, there's been a lot of things written about how the polls were showing it was a lot closer than it was, but judging by, that data that was available 2 years ago before there was a repeal vote, or a year ago, there was no indication that people in Massachusetts did not want a casino. And so I think that it was somewhat of a ploy by the vote no side to be like, hey, look, the gap is closing. We need you to get out there and vote. That's a pretty standard tactic, I think.
Yeah, and I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, Dan. I think the polling, there's a lot of terrible polling that goes on in politics. And it's dumb because there's just a lot of really bad polling done, and it's not done well. But that's the only data you have, and you go off of those data points. And you take a look into the numbers, and you take a look at the internals on the polls, and you start to realize, yeah, this is a terrible poll. But it's the only data that you have, and so you sort of go out there with it. There are some political ploys that are involved in it, but by and large, it's just bad data, and you have to take it for what it is. On that front, what I thought was interesting, at least in the Massachusetts scene, is about the three casinos in question. Each has a unique storyline, which I think makes it a little different than other casino referendums. So, Aaron, you brought up the Springfield and recovering from the tornado. In Everett, you're talking about reclaiming this industrial land that could never be done by anyone else. And if that land isn't reclaimed, it's just going to sit unused as a festering open sore in the community. And so you have that. And then you have the slot in Plainville where, the only way the track is going to survive. And when you take a look at those three sort of unique stories, it makes it a lot easier to vote for casinos and be in favor of casinos being built there, just because you have these sort of public service, public needs that are being met in very different ways, and it was hard to argue against a lot of that.
Well, beyond Massachusetts, there were also plenty of other election results to go over. One of the things that obviously is going to affect what happens at a federal level is that the United States Senate has been turned over to the Republican Party. So Mitch McConnell is likely the new majority leader. Harry Reid of Nevada will no longer be the Senate's most powerful. Or Vin would argue he's not actually all that powerful, but in theory, he's the most powerful man in the Senate, at least for a couple more months until the new Senate takes charge. In terms of federally going forward with any sort of, there hasn't really been an appetite to do anything. But Harry Reid has in the past tried to get online poker only legislation through. He's worked on it. Vin, is there any chance something happens in lame duck session to try to push this through in the same way that the UIGEA was pushed through in 2006 when Bill Frist knew that he was losing control?
Yeah, none. Because this is happening out in the open now. When Bill Frist was doing it, no one was paying attention. No one cared. People care now. People pay attention now. You've got Sheldon Adelson financing a gazillion-dollar campaign to prevent this from happening. There's no way on God's green earth that anything happens during a lame duck session. It isn't. And Harry Reid is basically shifting positions from the most ineffective leader, Senate majority leader in the history of the U.S., to what's going to be the only job he's suited for, which is to be a tenacious leader of the minority. He's actually really good at obstruction and obfuscation and making sure things don't happen. And so, yes, he's shifting jobs, and now he's going to be counted on to be the bulk ward against the Sheldon Adelson forces, who are going to try and push an online gaming agenda through, or push a bill that bans all online gaming. through. And so now Harry Reid's going to be counted on to do that. And so that's going to be his – I mean, if you take a look at what his prime responsibility is in terms of his responsibility to the people that put him in office, which is largely casino gaming money, they're going to count on him to stop any anti-online gaming legislation from going through. But there's nothing happening in the lame duck session. And so then it's going to be Reid's job to prevent stuff from happening. But once again, this goes to show you just how terrible the industry as a whole is at lobbying on the federal level. The fact that they've only got one legislator in their pocket with all of that money means that they're just awful at it, just awful at it. And until they fix that, no good can come from any legislation at the federal level.
Well, I mean, the industry is also divided here, Vin. It's not as if, I mean, I think that they have plenty of legislators in their pocket. It's just that there's a lot of different pockets, and you know,
they don't all fit the same mold. No, I'm not buying that at all because
Sheldon Adelson has incredibly deep pockets, and he's speaking on a different voice from the AGA was saying.
Yeah, I mean, the AGA is now refusing to take a stance.
Yeah, but I mean, if you take a look at other issues that the AGA cares about, say FinCEN and that sort of thing, in the application of FinCEN rules, the casino industry isn't winning there. They're not losing there, but they're not winning either. The fact of the matter is that the casino industry struggles to affect legislation at the federal level. So it's not just on issues where there's division within the industry. Even in areas where there's consensus within the industry, they struggle to affect policy at the federal level. And that sits on the casino industry. The casino industry was like, well, as long as we have Harry Reid in power, you know, he can do whatever we want coming out of Nevada. We get the Senate Majority Leader. You want to know what? That's a terrible legislative strategy. A good legislative strategy is what Sheldon Adelson's doing, spreading the money around, going after state governors, going after state legislators, going after congressional delegations, finding out what everyone in the body wants, and giving and trying to help them in that, and peel off voters individually. So you start to build consensus. You get 25, 30, 40 people on board, 50 people on board, instead of counting on one guy to do your work. That's really smart work. And the industry just hasn't been that savvy, not just on this issue, but over the course of the last 10 to 15 years.
Well, be that as it may, though, what we're talking about is this issue in particular, and the industry is divided on this issue. So whether their strength in lobbying in Washington is, you know, while it is problematic for other issues, it doesn't really matter because they're not all on the same page.
Yeah, but it goes down to things like this. So take Churchill Downs, for instance, right? So Churchill Downs is pro online poker. That's their thing. They're based in Kentucky. They're pro online poker. They haven't been able to get Mitch McConnell on board, even though ostensibly Mitch McConnell should be representing them and representing their interests. Right. That just hasn't been happening. You can take a look at the California tribes, for example. Dianne Feinstein is one of the chief proponents of banning all forms of online gaming. California doesn't want all forms of online gaming banned, but you've got Dianne Feinstein, who the gaming industry within the state of California has done a terrible job of getting on board. And so when you take a look at all of these individual instances where local interests should be lobbying their representatives, should be lobbying their senators, and should be lobbying their congressmen to do that, they're not doing it effectively. They're not doing a good job. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. So it goes beyond the industry being divided over online gaming. It goes to the fact that, generally speaking, the industry has done a terrible job at lobbying the federal government. Now, they've done a terrific job at lobbying state governments, and they do a terrific job at lobbying local governments, but they're just awful on the federal government, and that's something the industry needs to own up and say, yeah, you want to know, we've been terrible at that. We need to change that.
Going forward past the lame duck, what's the prognosis federally? Do you think that, you know, with a Republican Congress now, I mean, I don't think anything will certainly, well, I don't know, who knows? I don't think, you know, the president doesn't seem to have a really strong stance on this one way or the other. And if you have a Republican Congress that is really eager to take up causes that will serve, that will make their conservative base happy, that won't be incredibly unpopular, for instance, like, I don't think you're going to see all of a sudden like a gay marriage amendment, you know, going through, like, some sort of law going through Congress, just because I don't think you want to see, I don't think there are a lot of Republican lawmakers that are going to want to run on that sort of platform, given the sort of sea change that you're seeing. I don't think you're going to see, at least not with a Democratic president, huge changes to abortion law, because the president will never sign that. However, if you want to make your conservative base happy and avoid being primaried by a Tea Party challenger, maybe you do something on the casino front, because you're going to get your social conservatives really happy. Do you think that that's something that could happen in the next 2 years? Are, you know, is there a danger that you know, you're going to end up with the same sort of situation that you have with PAPSA, with, you know, where you've got sports betting legal in Nevada only and a couple other states on an unlimited basis, and then you'll have internet gambling legal in Nevada and Delaware and New Jersey, but nowhere else, because there's a ban with grandfather clauses for those states that have already gone forward.
I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility. You attach it to must-pass legislation the same way the UIGA went through.
Exactly. Well, I mean, because I don't see this as something that is that will cause the president, like, President Obama is not going to veto something that he wants to see done because that's inserted in as well, right?
No, but no, Obama won't veto it. That's why it's up to Harry Reid. Look, Harry Reid, at this point, is the ultimate bulk war. He's the only guy that can throw a monkey into the wrench on all of this. And so, I mean, to a certain degree, I mean, as much as I've blasted Harry Reid for his ineffective leadership and just terrible, as much as I blasted the gaming industry for just being generally awful at lobbying at the federal level, I mean, and I understand that the industry is divided on the issue. I'm not discounting that. But at the end of the day, you know, Harry Reid's the guy that can throw a monkey into the wrench in terms of attaching a bill. He can rally support around it. He can filibuster. He can do a lot of things. He can be procedurally difficult if he wants to over this. And so, yeah, I think there's a substantial bill. I think efforts will be made to attach a bill to must-pass legislation. And at that point, it all comes down to Harry Reid and how hard he wants to fight for it.
What I'm interested to see is, you know, thinking about the 2016 elections, you know, who's going to be the new president, what kind of Republican candidate is going to emerge, and, you know, it doesn't seem like we really know at this point, but, you know, you're seeing a lot of buzz for, you know, libertarian-type candidates coming out of the Republican Party, which, you know, I would like, but that's not going to be aligned with a lot of the issues that social conservatives push for, and certainly not what, you know, Sheldon Adelson is pushing for. And so that could really change a lot. You know, I don't know if anything's going to get done in the next 4 years, but in 2016, or 2 years, sorry, but in 2016 is when we could really see a big difference, depending on...
Yeah, but there's only buzz for one libertarian candidate, Dan. That's Paul.
Right,
I mean,
but he is one of the stronger candidates.
Where's the buzz for any other libertarian candidate on the presidential level?
No, there isn't. What I was talking about was Paul.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, ultimately this is a demographics question, right? As long as our presidential candidates and as long as our Senate candidates are all 50-plus, we've got an issue, at least until – Aaron, you and I turn 50, in which case we won't have an issue. But as long as that's the case, it's an issue, because what you have is you have politicians in leadership positions who fundamentally don't get the issue, and that's problematic. And they can be educated on it. But they can also be educated to look the other way too, and see things the other way, and because they just don't grasp it. And this is something that, you know, 10, 12 years ago, people were saying the same thing about gay marriage. It was a question of running out the clock on gay marriage. It was going to happen. It was inevitable. At some point, the demographics were just going to change and people were going to be for it, and it was going to happen. And that wasn't an answer that people in favor of gay marriage liked or wanted to hear, but that was very much the reality of the situation. And sure enough, if you take a look at where gay marriage is now in terms of where it was 10 or 12 years ago, things have changed tremendously. And the same thing is true with online poker. Or online gaming in general, is that at some point the clock on the opposition is going to run out. The question is, how do you limit damage before that happens? And so that's what the real issue is. Can we limit the damage? Can you stop a ban from being in place? Because in 10 years, you really don't want to wait 10 years, but in 10 years, this is a non-issue. Right now, it's an issue. And so how do you keep the damage from going into place? And that's what people didn't understand about sports betting. In 92 when PASPA passed, the sports leagues and the NFL in particular knew that in 10 years they were going to be on the losing side of the argument. So they had to get something passed right then and there. Because if they didn't get something passed right then and there, sports betting was going to be legal throughout the U.S. And they got it done. And so that's the real danger here, is right now the opponents of online gambling know that they have to get something done right now. Because if they don't get it done right now, in 10 years, this argument doesn't matter.
That's a good point.
Well, it certainly will be interesting, and we will be following it. Vin, were there any other election results that were important that we should be talking about?
Yeah, there were a few. And so in California, Prop 48 was rejected. And basically what would have happened is it would have allowed a casino to be bought in Fresno, the north folks of the Rancheria Mono Indians. This was not on their reservation. It was on land that they bought. This is a tribe that really needed the casino and the casino revenue. But it wasn't on the reservation land. So the legislature had okayed the casino. Now the voters have rejected it. And a lot of the money spent in rejecting this was by other tribal casinos and other Native American groups who said, yeah, we don't want the competition from another casino in the state. And so now this is in limbo. No one really knows what's going to happen with this proposal. In Colorado, there was a measure to add casinos to racetracks in three counties there. That was rejected as well. And that was rejected based on the argument that it would take casino revenue away from existing casinos. And so Colorado already has several existing casinos. So those were two of the more interesting votes out there. Where that you have places that already have casinos that voted against increasing competition, and then South Dakota, I love it. There have been some casinos, gambling houses in Deadwood, South Dakota, and they voted to authorize roulette, keno, and craps at those places. I just think Deadwood, South Dakota, should have those sorts of games.
Wouldn't be Deadwood without it.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to my visit to Deadwood to check out those offerings.
Yeah, and also locally in Rhode Island for you guys, the state of Rhode Island approved table games at Newport Grand, but the city rejected it. The city of Newport rejected it. So there will be no table games at Newport Grand.
Yes.
That's disappointing.
Well, it wouldn't have been poker.
Yeah, I know, but at least with table games, there would still be a reason for you and I to go.
Would there?
I mean, in theory. I mean, I don't go play table games very often. But if I end up at a casino,
but Foxwoods is so close.
I know, but if there were a reason to go to Newport Grand, then I would at least have something to do while I was there.
Yeah, good point.
But now with just slot machines, it's unlikely that that would be something that I would be partaking in, but that's just me. Anyway, let's move on to California, where, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the Santa Isabel Tribe.
I just want to throw out one thing about the Newport Grand. How did the city decide it's too good for table games? What is it about table games? Yeah, we're just too good for that. Anyway, please continue.
That is a strange, I don't know, who knows? It's a very strange result, but it's probably, I mean, the people who voted that way don't want people to go to the casino at all. And I'm sure if they got the chance to vote for a repeal, then they might vote in favor of it, to be honest.
Well, it's a get off my lawn vote. It's just like, well, table games, they'll bring in those young 25-year-olds. We don't want them hanging around here. Let's vote against it.
Unless more unreasonable unless than any other vote?
They only want the young 25-year-olds if their parents are willing to spend extravagantly on a wedding.
Yes.
Yes.
Like my parents. Or I guess Ashley's parents, more accurately.
Did you get married in Newport?
Basically, in Bristol.
Well, there you go. I can't believe I managed to pull that off. That's kind of a nice touch to end our Rhode Island discussion. But let's, as I said, move on to the West Coast in California, where the Santa Isabel Tribe has launched online bingo through Desert Rose Bingo. Van, you were kind of on top of this story from the start. Originally, their plan was to launch online poker. They talked about doing that over the summer. I mean, it's been months and months and months, and they said that they were within, you know, days of launching. Certainly not to my surprise, they have still yet to launch online poker, but certainly this is a move towards that, right, with the real money online bingo going forward in California.
Oh, it absolutely is a move towards that. More importantly, I'm shocked. I mean, I am seriously shocked that this has not happened anywhere else in the country before. So you have to take a look at Indian gaming law to understand why this is, why I'm shocked that this hasn't happened elsewhere. So in Indian gaming law, tribal casinos are able to offer whatever types of casino gaming is already legal in the state. And that tends to be bingo and class two gaming. Class two gaming being video lottery terminals, that sort of thing. And most states that stuff's already legal, so tribes can offer stuff that is already legal in that state on their reservation. So almost any tribe in the U.S. could have gone online for real money online bingo a long time ago. It was perfectly within their legal rights to do so, and that's why I'm really surprised that it hasn't happened up until this point. And there are some open legal questions as to where does the wager take place, because the wager is supposed to take place on Indian lands and that sort of thing. But still, even with all of that in play, it would have been perfectly reasonable for any Indian tribe anywhere to go ahead and do this. And so the fact that the Santa Isabel are the first is surprising, but it's about time it happens. And so from a legal standpoint, I think they're on pretty solid ground. And I think a lot of other tribes are going to follow suit, because let's face it, bingo is popular, right? I have no idea why, but bingo is popular. I mean, I'm not a bingo player, but I actually want to do this now. I want to go to Foxwoods and play bingo, because all the people playing bingo in Foxwoods look like they're having a good time. And that place is always packed. It's really freaky. And so I want to go and I want to enjoy the experience.
They all have dementia at this point.
No, but that's the thing. There are lots of young people playing bingo, too. And so it's just really weird. It's a real family thing to do. Do you guys remember the TV show Vegas?
No.
I don't.
Oh, it was a network. James Caan, Josh Duhamel, Vanessa Marcel. Yeah, it was. They actually had a whole episode devoted to like the bingo room at the Montecito Resort and Casino. I can't believe I know the names of this stuff. Anyway, Bingo works, and so there's plenty of money to be made in online bingo. I'm surprised this hasn't happened sooner. I think that this has a fairly good degree for success. And if you look at it that way, if they're able to be successful and build the brand through online bingo, and then they successfully move into online poker, it almost becomes a better strategy. Build some confidence and competence with this product, then launch online poker. People are used to betting with you and used to wagering with you and have sort of accepted it. And you move forward with that. But I would expect to see a lot more online bingo offered, not just the state of California, but throughout the country. This, to me, is just the tip of the iceberg.
You know the legal arguments a lot better than I do, but my contention is here, Churchill Downs offers a bingo game through their site, Luckety.com. Now, the results of those bingo games are related to horse races. So, I don't know exactly how it works. But essentially, you're just picking a card, and by picking your card, you're randomly getting like a trifecta or a superfecta or some sort of like a pick six, some long odds ticket, which the bingo game then, like, once the race is finished, the bingo game executes, and it's a visual thing that you can watch without having to watch a horse race to see if you win. And you don't know how much you win if you win, because the odds change, and it's like, you know, it's not like, you know, we have a bingo jackpot of $15,000 for a $1 ticket. Whoever, you know, wins, this is going to win $15,000. No, it's not how it works. It's based on horse racing payouts. But that's perfectly legal. I mean, I understand this has to do with tribal gaming, and so it's a completely different sort of scenario. But my argument would be, if you're allowed to do that, you should just be allowed to do online bingo, because no one's playing at Luckety and being like, I'm doing this because it's through horse racing.
Oh, yeah, but that's the thing. It's legal because it's based on betting on horse racing, which is legal everywhere. The problem is that game bears no resemblance to real bingo. Whereas what the San Isabel is going to do...
It absolutely bears resemblance to real bingo. It is a bingo game. Don't know that it's a horse racing. It's a bingo game.
It's a bingo game, but this is a real bingo. You know, this isn't bingo based on the outcome of horse results. This is real bingo. You know, you call bingo as his name or whatever they do. But it's just not B55 and, you know, G48 and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what happens in Luckety as well. It's just those numbers are representative of different horses.
Not even that, actually.
I mean, it's just a graphical display. I mean, it's just like, you know, once the thing is over, you've already been given a card. It doesn't matter that, you know, the B17 isn't actually even related to a different horse. It's just this is how we're going to make your results look fancy.
Yeah,
by acting like there's a bingo game involved.
But people like the actual process of playing bingo.
Yeah, this is the process. That has the same process.
You're basically just saying the RNG is determined differently in this game.
Yeah, no, the RNG, yes. there is an RNG in this one. There isn't a random number generator determining what your cards are going to get. If you don't win, it's going to make it look like you have a lot of near misses, because they're just going to be like, okay, well, this isn't a winning ticket, so we can't have a winning combination, but let's make it look nice and close, so that the player, you know, feels like they got close.
It's a lottery.
Does the horse racing bingo take out? The horse racing bingo has to take longer than a normal bingo game to play out.
No, because they say the game's going to start in 10 minutes. So the game starts in 10, it's whenever the race results are determined. So, like, between, you can buy a ticket from up until 3 minutes before the end of the, you know, 3 minutes before the race begins. Or you can even probably buy it during the race. I have no idea. But whenever betting on the horse race ends, that's when the thing closes, and then there's like a one or two minute delay for the race.
You need several races to fill out a bingo card? It can't be done with just one race.
You don't fill out anything. You just buy tickets. You just buy cards.
Oh, I understand.
And then there's a delay. I mean, it takes a while. But in a real bingo room, they'll be like, okay, the game starts at 8. This is the same thing. The game starts in 15 minutes.
No, like I said, I think, look, for bingo aficionados, playing quote-unquote real bingo matters. Going through the process, announcing the squares, talking with the moderator, talking with each other, knowing that numbers and letters are being selected, even if it's by an RNG, knowing they're being selected by an RNG now and not being determined by a horse race. That stuff matters.
Well, to be perfectly honest, from my perspective, if I were a bingo player, I would be more likely to play through Luckety because I know that there's not going to be any question about whether it's legal. You're dealing with Churchill Downs, which is a long, you know, it has a long history of, you know, gaming in the United States through horse racing. I don't care how the numbers are determined, to be honest, whether it's a random number generator or a horse race. All I care about is whether I'm going to be paid. I'm still not 100% sure. I know you say that this is perfectly legal, and I'm not going to argue on the merits of whether it is legal or not, but I have a feeling the Department of Justice is not going to be all that pleased about this.
To me, the Department of Justice has no leg to stand on this one. To me, online bingo.
But they had no leg to stand on the Wire Act as well. Calling internet gambling a violation of the Wire Act, they had no leg to stand on, but they did for more than a decade.
Yeah, they did for more than a decade. But here's the ultimate problem they have, is that with Class 3 gaming, which is online casinos, slot machines and all that sort of stuff, that's a different class of gaming. What's legal, illegal in that state matters. All right, they've already come out and said intrastate gaming is legal. So now you have to figure out what's Class 3 and Class 2 gaming. Now, there can be a debate, if you want to have a debate, over whether poker is Class 2 or Class 3. Most people say it's Class 2, which means it's perfectly legal to offer. Some people say it's Class 3. But there's no debate over bingo. If you accept the premise that there's intrastate online gaming, which the Department of Justice says there is, all right, we're in agreement. The Department of Justice says interstate online gambling now exists. There is no argument over that. So once you accept that premise, online bingo automatically becomes legal. Automatically. In states that allow it. And California is one of them.
All right, well, we'll see what happens going forward. But what's the difference between bingo and poker? Now, how is that?
So look, most people would argue that online poker is a Class 2 game. Some people argue that online poker is a Class 3 game. So Class 3 games are traditionally house bag. And so that's where poker comes in. It's not house bag. And because it's not house bag, it becomes a Class 2 game. And so that's the argument there. The argument there. Part of the reason why bingo was made a Class 2 game is because so many people, so many states offered it. You know, it's offered in churches and all those sorts of things. So no one really wanted to go through that regulatory procedure. With poker, it technically it falls into Class 2 because it's not house bag, but there are some people that view it as a traditional casino game, and they want to make it a Class 3 game. So there's debate over it. But
right.
I don't think
so.
To me, there's no question that poker is a Class 2 game. It is a Class 2 game. But there are other people who make the argument that it's a Class 3 game because it's a traditional casino game. I think the argument's silly. I don't think it holds up in court. But, you know, you get into those types of arguments. You know, bingo's bingo. Bingo's always been a Class 2 game, and there's no legal ambiguity surrounding it.
Well, we'll certainly be watching this to see what happens going forward, and we'll be discussing further bingo room openings or federal actions against this, whether it happens or not, whether they have a leg to stand on or not. That hasn't stopped the federal government in the past from necessarily taking actions.
Yeah, but
although this
but
is much, much more tricky with a tribe. When you're talking about tribal authority, that is an area where I think the DOJ is much, 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 much more likely to tread lightly here.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The tribe is doing something smart. This is intrastate. They're not accepting bets across state lines. So the DOJ
That's
has already
true.
Said that there's intrastate gambling. Well, this is intrastate gambling. This isn't interstate. So the DOJ has already said there's intrastate gambling. And so they've already allowed New Jersey, they've already allowed Nevada to do it. So this isn't a violation of the Wire Act, and the DOJ can't claim it's a violation of the Wire Act. So you can throw that part out of the equation. That's the part that I'm saying the DOJ doesn't have a leg to stand on, because this is intrastate. If the tribes have been accepting bets across state lines, then the DOJ can legitimately step in. They can't. They're already allowing states to do this. So now it becomes a question of what's legal in California. Well, bingo's Class 2 gaming. Class 2 gaming has always been up to the jurisdiction of the tribes to offer. That's why I've always been surprised that Indian tribes haven't done it, especially after the Wire Act was redefined by the DOJ. Every tribe in the country, almost every, not every, but most tribes in the country in a position of doing. That's why I expect to see it more. That's why the legal position, I understand what you're saying, that you're saying the DOJ can't be happy with this, but the DOJ has already licensed and DOJ has already accepted intrastate gambling. And to say that they'd be unhappy with a tribe participating in intrastate gambling doesn't make sense to me. They've already accepted the premise.
Well, what about the state, though? What about California? They haven't had a chance to – well, they've had plenty of chances, but they haven't actually gone forward with state legislation to regulate internet gambling.
Yeah, so the state of California might not be happy with it. The problem the state of California has is that the state of California doesn't need a – tribes don't need a compact with the state of California to offer bingo. Tribes need a compact to offer online gaming. So that's the massive difference, to offer online casinos. For any casino games, the tribe needs a compact with the state. But the tribe doesn't need a compact with the state to offer bingo. And so that's where you're sitting at. So the state might be unhappy about it, and they might be looking at legal ways to shut this down. But in reality, the tribe doesn't need their permission. The only unsettled question legally in all of this is, where is the bet taking place? Where is the bingo game taking place? If the state wants to argue that the bingo game is taking place on the player's computer and not on tribal lands, they can say, yeah, we should be able to shut this down. But that's a tenuous legal position, and I'm not 100% sure in California state law, but I'm pretty sure that they allow bingo to happen in places other than tribal lands. And so now you get into a real tricky situation. And so I think, yeah, the state of California might not be terribly happy about it, but from a legal standpoint, bingo is just really safe. The state doesn't have much of a leg to stand on in outlawing bingo. They might not be happy about it. The other thing is, other tribes in California probably aren't annoyed either. They might have been annoyed if, you know, the online poker room had launched, because that's something they're actively working on with the state, whereas bingo hasn't been an issue. So they're like, yeah, you want to run your little online bingo room down there? Go ahead. But there are some politics, I'm sure, intertribal politics at play at this. But if bingo allows the San Isabel to say, hey, we can operate real money gaming safely, watch us, we've done a good job, now let's expand into poker and let's expand beyond that, it seems like a sound strategy to me. I'm not worried about the legal stuff. If you want to worry about whether the San Isabel can, you know, run a good operation, that's fine. I mean, that's a legitimate worry. But legally, I'm not worried at all. I just don't think there's an issue there. But if you want to worry about the operation side, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to worry about the operation side. But I wouldn't hesitate in playing online bingo at this place. But, what's my deposit going to be? $10? It's not like I'm going to be losing a lot of money playing online bingo there anyway.
Well, let's move from California to Las Vegas, where next week the World Series of Poker will host its final table of the 2014 main event. Nine players remaining. Vin, you and I are going to be there. Play starts on Monday, I believe 4:30 local time there. It's going to be broadcast on ESPN on a 30-minute delay, complete with hole cards for the first time this year. In the past, they have shown hole cards at the completion of the hand, but they will show hole cards right at the beginning of the hand this year. And I'm not sure if they're going to show everyone's hole cards right from the start, like, you know, like every hand that's folded, or if only if when players get involved in a hand. I'll have to be,
I think it's when players get involved in the hand.
So if a player like tank folds pocket jacks, you know, from the button after a bet and a three bet, we're not going to know that he had pocket jacks.
You will after he folds. There's a lag on the hole cards in which they show the hole cards at the end of the hand.
No, this year they've increased the delay to 30 minutes instead of 15.
Right.
And they're going to show the hole cards at the beginning of the hand. So people will know.
Okay.
In the past, they only showed hands. In this situation, say someone was on the button in previous years. Say someone was on the button, and there's a bet and a raise. You know, there's a raise and a re-raise in front of him.
Okay.
And it's three bet, and he's got pocket jacks, and he's even if he thinks for 2 minutes and then decides to fold.
Right.
They didn't show that he had jacks. They
right.
would show what was in the big blind, and they would show the other two players who voluntarily entered the pot, but they would not show the other players in the hand.
Right.
So I'm not sure if they're going to just show everybody's hand as they're folding, which is what they do on the canned coverage, right? I mean, you see when someone folds 8-3,
yeah.
And they show everybody's hand as they're mucking. So I'm not sure if they're going to do that this time, though, because that's more information for the players that they can kind of digest as the night goes on. But regardless, I think it will be interesting to see how the new coverage works.
Do you think the 30-minute delay changes this whole running back and forth between the rail and the thing trying to get information on hands?
No, they're going to – I mean, how many hands an hour are they playing anyway? 25, maybe max 20?
Yeah, and they're
so
really
they're
just
only
trying
gonna
to
be,
get...
They're only going to be 6-8 hands ahead. They just want to figure out, like, what did he three bet with? Like, they're going to want to know type of information.
It's not even just 20, 25 hands an hour. It's how many relevant hands are there an hour?
Right.
And that's like – and also what you really are going to want to know is, like, okay, if there's a guy who's raising – a lot, you want to find out what he's been raising with. You want to find out his strategy. Now, the 30-minute delay, you do have to take that with a grain of salt, knowing that, okay, that's the way he was playing 30 minutes ago. Dynamics can change in 30 minutes, even though there haven't been that many hands. But, yeah, I mean, it's still going to be just as relevant, I think.
Yeah, I mean, for me, one of the most frustrating things about watching the final table is just constant back and forth with the rail. It just annoys me. But I understand that's part of the game, and I understand why they do it. I just want them to sit down and play.
I mean,
but, you know, I watched so I was there in 2010, and I don't think that they did the live coverage then in 2000 when Duhamel won. I think they did it on a 1 day delay. They managed to cut together the final table in 2 hours on like a 1 day delay. And
yes.
There was just as much going back and forth because what happens is it's not necessarily – I mean, obviously they're going over to find out this information now. But previously, players, every time they were involved in a hand, in the aftermath of the hand afterwards, as soon as they got a chance, they went over to talk to their friends and find out, you know, like, this is what he had. This is why I did this. They just kind of – you know, it's there aren't many opportunities for you to have a group of – 20 people like sitting on a stage watching you play poker, many of whom are probably good friends of yours who also play poker, who you respect their opinion. So you get a chance to like bounce things, ideas off of them, like in the moment when you're playing for, you know, $10 million, like that, you're going to take advantage of that opportunity. You're going to, and plus it's just the stress relief. Like you're sitting there under the lights and under the, like, you know, in the face of the cameras and, you know, this is a chance for you to go over and be like, wow, can you just believe what happened? I mean, it's just natural to do that. Obviously, it's a little bit increased because, you know, they're trying to find out this information. But, I mean, the same thing was happening before they were broadcasting it live.
Yeah, and Vin, you're gonna like Billy Pappas, and you're gonna like probably Bruno Politano, because they're the two most likely guys to not incorporate that strategy. I mean, I can almost guarantee Billy Pappas is not going to have other professional poker players on his rail that he's gonna go talk strategy with. He's gonna have his Lowell townies and his foosball buddies there, just absolutely hammered, and that's the way he's gonna approach the final table. And Bruno is gonna have that crazy Brazilian rail. I don't know if you were still there during the main event when his rails started showing up, Ben.
Oh, I was there.
You guys are in for just a spectacle.
Well, I mean, we've seen Brazilian soccer fans, so I mean, I'm not going to be surprised by anything I see. I mean, last year we had a giant panda rush the stage, and this is like I can't imagine what, you know, Bruno and his pals have planned for this trip. You know, they're coming all the way from Brazil. This is that's a big trip. You're gonna make the most of it.
People were there last year,
like in the summer.
There,
yeah.
And I heard that a few of them flew in, but there were a lot of them.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Bruno's got, I mean, there's a whole campaign to get behind Bruno in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Neymar coming out and saying, we got to root Bruno on in Las Vegas. Neymar's the most famous guy on the planet when it comes to soccer. I mean, when you think about this, the entire country has gotten behind this guy. They want him to bring this home to Brazil. They're going to send a massive rail over there, and it's going to be absolutely insane. I'm hoping they bring the samba drums and they start beating and dancing like it's a soccer game. I'm looking forward to this. I mean, it has a chance to be a serious Brazilian party. And how great would it be for a Brazilian party to break out on the Rio? I mean, that would just be outstanding.
It's going to happen. But the unfortunate part, though, is that Bruno is the short stack. So it actually might be good because you'll have this party that'll last maybe a couple hours, but you're not going to want this crowd to be around till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, we're going to get tired of it awful quick.
You're going to get tired. I mean, it's going to be awesome for a while. And they'll be there as soon as they're allowed to walk into the Amazon room. The theater.
The thing is, Bruno might be the short stack, but he isn't really short stack. I mean, he's got more than 30 big blinds to play with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's still so much play at this final table. But just in terms of, you know, in relation to all the other players, you know, he's more the most likely to go out early.
To me, this is one of the interesting things about this final table. Is that, yeah, we have some short stacks at the table, but in previous final tables, in previous November 9th, there's been a lot less play available. This time around, I mean, there's a lot of play available. There isn't anyone that's so severely short stacked that they need to start making moves right away.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and that's definitely going to change the dynamic of the final table, and it's one of the reasons why I'm actually pretty confident in one of the short stacks. I think William Tonking, who I believe is either in seventh or eighth. I think he's primed to make a big run. I mean, he's a professional. He's mostly a cash game player. There's a lot of cash game players at this table, which really should make for a good dynamic. Tonking and Newhouse and Sindelar are all cash game grinders. And I just think, you know, Tonking has the poise to be able to get this done. Actually, shortly before the World Series, he took down a big tournament in online poker in New Jersey for like $50,000. And so he has big-time final table experience, although I'm sure a lot of these guys do, other than Pappas. But, yeah, I mean, there's enough play. I mean, last year when we came in, it was Newhouse and Benefield, right?
Who
had like six big blinds and they went out.
Well, they had more than six. I think they had like 15.
I don't even think they had that much.
He had like 9 million. I don't remember what the big blind.
I just remember the big blind was
500,000. So he had like 18 big blinds.
I remember thinking that any time they entered the pot was going to have to be all in.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I think Benefield doubled up. And that's why he outlasted Newhouse. But, yeah, that's sort of what happened. And so that changed the dynamic at the beginning of the final table where nobody wanted to play a hand. And now I think you're going to see a lot of play. You're going to see a lot of small pots.
I think this is the first November 9. I'm 85% sure. I think this is the first November 9 where there hasn't been a player in single digits in terms of millions. I mean, everyone is – has more than 10 million in chips.
Yeah. And what's sort of really interesting about that is if you look at the lead up to the final table, and I was there in July, because of that dynamic, you had Mark Newhouse running over the table because nobody wanted to go out, right? Nobody wanted to take a big risk because nobody was short stacked. And so Newhouse was raising every single pot that was available to him. He was calling in position and pre-flop raises on almost every single pot. And he was able to exploit the table not wanting to go out. I mean, making the November 9, you know, aside from the pay jump from 10th to 9th, just simply being at the November 9 is such a huge deal. And he was able to exploit that. And I'm wondering if he's going to be able to further exploit that at the final table. Because he just seems to have the attitude where he doesn't care.
The one thing he said repeatedly, if you've been watching the ESPN broadcasts, is that he will not finish ninth again because he felt like finishing ninth was worse than finishing tenth.
He's not going to finish ninth. It's impossible.
It's not impossible. It absolutely is possible.
But I'm saying it would be almost impossible for him to make a shattering mistake and go out immediately. Like, he's third in chips? So he'd have to tangle with, like, Van Hoof or Sindelar. It's unlikely to happen. I mean, I could see him getting in a big pot with Van Hoof because Van Hoof is crazy. But Sindelar, I don't think it's going to happen between those two. So other than that,
You've got Stevenson ahead of him, too. And so there's a couple people ahead of him he can tangle with, and there's a couple people that are right behind him that he can tangle with in terms of Adoni Larrabe and Sindelar. But to me, what changes the dynamic of this table is the playoff structure is a lot flatter, guys.
What? No, it's not. It's 10 million for first.
Yeah, it's more severe than it's ever been.
It's flatter from second to ninth because of the 10 million payout.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
This is the most top heavy main event bracelet ever.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's a lot flatter from second to ninth. And I think that changes the way people play out, don't you?
Yeah, it is absolutely going to make people go for the win, which is definitely really interesting. But at the same time,
and you also don't know what kind of deals guys are going to come up with in the final two or three that are kind of, you know, that will not be sanctioned. I'm just saying when you have a payout structure that goes from I'm not exactly sure what the payouts are. But that
was my point. From second to nine, the payout structure is so much flatter. And yeah, you have huge jump at one, but I think that really changes the dynamics of the way people play in this.
Well, yes, Vin, in a vacuum, you're right that the payout structure is flatter from second through ninth. However, we're still talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, which means a lot to these people. So, like, moving up one spot in the pay jump is life-changing money, just the difference in that pay jump. So it's not, like, people are going to be playing this from an ICM perspective, but also from a perspective of, like, okay, the marginal value of what that money actually means to me. That's huge. Like, that's why the main event final table is unlike any other final table in that it's always life-changing money to move up a spot for everybody there. There's nobody at this final table. There's no Phil Ivey at this final table who is only going for the win. You know, I mean, there's going to be – everybody's going to say that, but at the same time, their decisions are going to be based off, like, okay, if I fold this, you know, that's a house right there because someone's going to go out on this pot or something like that. You know, that's still – that element is always in play.
I mean, let's look at the payouts. The payout for second place this year is $30,000 less than it was last year. The payout for first is $1.7 million more than it was last year. The payout for ninth place this year is about the same as it was last year. The payout for eighth place this year is about the same as it was last year. We're talking differences of about $3,000. Payout for seventh is 1.2 1.225 million last year. This year it's 1.235. It's different than 10,000. Payout for six this year is 1.62 million. Last year is 1.60 million. So there really isn't that much of a difference until you get to first. So it's not flatter this year as compared to last year. It's almost identical, except there's an extra $1.7 million on first place.
You know,
yeah, the difference between third is about $80,000 more for third this year than it was last year.
But
compared to $1.7 million for first, that's peanuts.
No, and so, you know, if we're going to make a couple of predictions for this tournament, or for the final table, the one guy I'm really going to be looking at is Andoni Larrabe, who's the youngest player at the table, by all accounts and from what I've seen of him. And I saw him play a hand, I think it was day three or day four, and I didn't know anything about him at the time, but I remembered seeing the hand and thinking, this kid is crazy. This kid is insane, okay? He's willing to play big pots. He's willing to take chances. You saw it on the TV coverage late in the game where he just shoved all in for, like, a lot of big blinds with eights.
With eights,
and then,
yeah.
And then the guy called him with eights.
Yeah, that was a crazy call. But yeah. But he ended up doubling up. Yeah, and that was the amateur, and I can't remember his name. He didn't make the final nine.
And that was kind of like, you know.
He's first to go.
I do think that he is a good chance that he'll be – first to go.
He could be first or ninth. Like that.
What's interesting is if he picks up big hands early, then he could have a chance to rocket up the standings. But I think he's most likely to pull the Joseph Chung, to pull the blow up of the final table.
Yeah, but the history of the main event final table, at least on November 9, suggests that the youngest player at the table is going to make a pretty deep run.
But that doesn't mean anything.
We're talking about, 4 years of 4 or 5 years of experience. I don't know that necessarily means anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not – and just in terms of, like, okay, can these guys stay up late? I mean, all these guys played seven straight grueling days of poker. I think they'll
yeah,
I think
starting,
they can handle
starting
the
a Monday on a full day's rest, I don't see any reason why in the first 2 hours.
When Ryan Reese won going in, everyone's like, yeah, no one thought he was going to do anything. I mean, to me, it is remarkable how the youngest players at these tables have had such low expectations going into it.
Ryan Reese got slapped in the face with the deck. I mean, the player who gets the best cards is going to win. That's the point. But I'm just saying Larrabe is most likely for a blow-up based on the evidence we've seen. Ryan Reese, if you look at the TV coverage from last year leading up, was one of the nittiest players in the field. He was like – I just remember one hand that he played where that was so nitty. It was hilarious. But, like, the images of these two players are completely, you know, polar. My point about Larrabe is just like he's insane. He's most likely to blow up. I think Pappas has that potential too, but I don't think he's going to pull the like six bet with ace seven like we saw with Joseph Chung at the final table.
That was so bizarre. I've never seen anything like that.
That was a play he made where if he was thinking in the moment about like the difference in pay jumps. He probably wouldn't have done it, but he was playing the tournament like it was a final table on PokerStars, and it's probably worked for him in the past. But yeah, that's my prediction there. I think Van Hoof's going to win. He's got the chip lead. He's got a ton of tournament experience online. He's crazy, but not crazy enough to do anything dumb. And I think if he gets heads up, he'll have the advantage.
Vin, who are you taking to win?
Well, I got a question. Has the November 9 chip leader ever won?
I don't know that they have. Jamie Gold, but he wasn't. That was before the November 9. Well, who was the chip leader last year?
J.C. Trent, right? It wasn't Reese, that's for sure.
No, it wasn't him. Reese. Duhamel was the chip leader.
No, because he won that huge pot off of Affleck before the final table.
No, Duhamel was the chip leader going in. So, yes, it has happened.
Yeah, so it has happened. There are a lot of people that expect Van Hoop to win. There are a lot of people that expect Newhouse to win. So here's the final table I want to see. I don't think it's going to happen, but I really want to see it. I want to see Larrabee play either Billy Pappas or Bruno Politano heads off, because I think that would just be fantastic.
We all want to see Billy Pappas.
I mean, everyone wants to see is Billy Pappas versus Bruno Politano, because it would just be explosive. It would be amazing. I mean, that would be, and you're talking about, now Bruno, I believe, is like a semi-pro, right? But I think he still embodies the spirit of an amateur, and certainly Billy Pappas is an amateur.
You know,
I mean,
you want to know something interesting, and based off the TV coverage that I saw, the worst player, like the guy who made the worst plays on the TV coverage, was Newhouse. He played one hand. Well, he played two hands that were extremely questionable, and he lost one, and he got lucky on the other one. But the one hand on TV was he raised like half his stack all in with ace nine or ace eight.
Yeah.
And then they had Antonio.
It was a four bet too. He raised pre flop with ace nine suited. Got three bet.
It was like he
got three bet to like 1.5, and he put in like 5.3. Basically, I mean, he was saying I'm pot committed, and that guy went all in for like 6.4,
right,
and he had to call off.
So you could four bet to 3 million, and
still make a case for folding and.
Right. So what he didn't want to get five bet bluffed, I guess. Like, it was just a really weird play, I think. It was probably the worst option that he could have done. And so that was weird. He played another hand like that leading up to the final table that wasn't, I don't think it was on TV or hasn't been on TV yet, but where he basically sort of did the same thing with like ace nine or ace eight or something like that, and ended up winning a race against threes or something. But it was just a really strange play. And then like people were asking him about it. He's like, yeah, you know what? I really didn't have a plan for that hand. I don't know what I was thinking. So it's interesting to me. He has sort of showed up in some really strange spots.
Yeah. But the thing, the guy I expect to win is Felix Stevenson.
Okay.
He's flying underneath the radar. I like my crazy Norwegians, but he's flying under the radar. He's under 25, and I know it shouldn't matter in this, but the history of the history of the November 9 shown us, and it's a small sample size, that it's you're going to get a winner that's under the age of 25. And you're going to get a fairly young winner, and I think he fits the bill on that standpoint. I think he's a pretty good player, and he's an online cash specialist, and he's second in chips, and I think that his game is pretty well suited for the final table, and I think he's going to do fairly well.
Well, I don't have an actual prediction because I still haven't seen the last. And actually, I'm not. This is what kind of stinks. I'm not going to be able to. Not that I'd trade it, but I'm not going to be able to see the final 2 hours of the edited footage where they go from. I don't know what they were at. I think they were at the final 15 or final 16.
Go out on a limb, man.
What? I know I'm not supposed to have a rooting interest, but I'm clearly rooting for Billy Pappas. That's my call. That's my call. I mean, it's the long shot to win.
I want the poker room at the Wynn Everett to be the William Papa Constantino Jr. poker room.
And also, Billy, if you're listening to our show, you're always welcome at the Casino City home game. I don't think we're going to get a game in before you're probably already out in Vegas, but I don't think we're going to get a game in before then, but after you're crowned the 2014 main event champion, you're welcome to bring a small portion of that $10 million to the game, and we would love to probably end up giving you more.
Does Billy have enough juice right now to just say, can you just set up a foosball room on my table before I get there, please?
Yeah. What I found really interesting that he said, I think in a chat with Andrew Feldman on ESPN, was that he has not spent any of the money yet. Like, maybe he spent it, but he hasn't taken the check yet because you know, he wants to find out, like, he doesn't want to do anything until he finds out how much he's going to win, which is, like, what a lot of people do, I think. But he just, I don't think he's taken the money yet. Like, he refused the check.
You'd think he'd want to at least be like, you know what, I'm driving around a 15-year-old Civic. Maybe I want to get a new car.
You've been dealing at Rockingham.
No way.
I think he's still been dealing at Rockingham. Like, he's been hanging
good
out
for
there.
Him.
He just seems like a world-class dude.
How have I not had him in my basement to play poker yet?
You missed your chance, because he might not do it after the final table. unless he goes out at 9. But
I'm guessing he didn't want to ruin his game error.
That's a good point.
It was so funny. Like, I started talking to his buddies on the rail when he won that four-way all-in pot, like, with, like, 100 players to go. And I found out his story. I was like, oh, that's really, really cool. And, like, just didn't think it was going to happen because he was still short-stacked. And he just kept grinding, and now he's here.
Well, we'll certainly be watching the whole thing with a great deal of interest. You can follow Vin and I on Twitter. I don't know how much we're going to be tweeting out because we don't want to spoil too much, but you can follow us at Casino City Vin and at Casino City _AT. You can also read our stories from the main event, from the Poker Hall of Fame induction, etc., at CasinoCityTimes.com. We'll be posting bust-out stories probably for every player, which is what we've done in the past, and then obviously recaps of the action, feature stories on notable things that happen at the main event at the November 9. But for now, we are going to wrap up the show with our NFL picks. Vin, from the road, you'll be happy to hear you had two pretty solid weeks. Week 8, you were 10-5. Are we at week 10 now? Yeah, week 8, you were 10-5. Week 9, you were 7-5. So on the season now, Vin, you are 67-62-1. But you're still in the red, unfortunately. The VIG has caught up to you. You are down $10.41. We make a fictional $10 wager on every game, or minus 0.9%. Dan, last week you were also 7-5. Vin had a slight edge on you because of differing VIG on different games. You were up $12.48 on the week. On the week, you are now in the black. You're up $6.83. You are 68-61-1. 7 games over 500 on the season, or up a grand total of 0.6%. I went 6-6. I was down $6 and change. I am still over 500, 65-64-1, but down just about $51 or 4.4% on the year. But we're going forward with week 10 of the NFL. First game of the week is tonight. It's the Battle of Ohio. Cleveland Browns face the Cincinnati Bengals. Cincinnati is a 6-point favorite at home. You get the Browns at minus 105. You get the Bengals at minus 115. Dan, what do you think?
I'm going with the Browns tonight. I think that it's going to be just a very close game between two pretty good teams, a division rival. Don't see this game going more than a field goal. So I will take Cleveland on the road.
Vin.
Yeah, I have a tough time with this game because, on the one hand, Cincinnati is the better team. And it just feels weird talking about Cleveland this late into the season. On the other hand, 6 points seems to be a lot for what's a rivalry game. And plus, I like the better price on Cleveland. So I'm going to take Cleveland at plus 6. I think they hang in there and they keep this game close. And maybe it's a field goal game at the end, but I'll take Cleveland plus 6.
I'm going to take the Bengals here. I've done absolutely zero research because I've found that the research doesn't actually help me. So I'm
Aaron,
going to
did
take,
you announce did you announce what your record was the last couple of weeks, or did we miss that?
I announced what it was last week. It was 6-6 last week. The week before that, you're just trying to gloat here, aren't you? The week before that, it was 4-11.
I honestly have no idea. So.
No, okay. Well, I went 4-11 the first week you were away. I was trying to gloss over that. I went 6-6 last week.
Okay.
But I'm going to take the Bengals here. I feel like Thursday night games tend to be blowouts, and so I'm going to take the home team here to get the blowout. Next up, Atlanta at Tampa Bay. The Falcons are 1.5-point favorites on the road. Vin, you love your home dogs.
Yeah, and I'm going to be banging the home dog here. Tampa going to a new quarterback, Josh McCown, who knows whether it's actually going to work or not. The one thing I'm counting on is the Atlanta defense just being terrible and Tampa finding some sort of rhythm with a new quarterback against them. Here's the weird thing. I think Tampa is the only team that's given up a blocked punt and a blocked field goal in the same game, and they've done it twice this year. And that's just really bizarre. I mean, how do you do that? But, I'll take Tampa plus 2.5 just because I like the home dog, and I think the quarterback change gives the Bucs a bit of a spark.
Dan?
I'm going with Atlanta. Atlanta put up something like 60 points last time they played Tampa Bay. Granted that they sort of got out of the gate smoking against them, and that was on the turf in Atlanta, but Tampa Bay's defense can't stop anybody, and Atlanta should be able to put up enough points to win this game and cover by the 1.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Atlanta here, too. I think that Tampa's not very good. Atlanta's not great either, but in the battle of not very good against not great either, I'll take not great either. Kansas City at Buffalo. The Chiefs are 2-point favorites on the road. You get Kansas City at -115, Buffalo at -105. I'll go first here. I like Kansas City. I think we're starting to get to the point of the season where Buffalo starts to fall apart after starting out of the gate pretty well. So I think the Chiefs are going to put up a lot of points this week. I will take the Chiefs to cover. Dan?
I'm taking Buffalo here. Looking at this game, and I think about if they were playing in Kansas City and the Chiefs would be 8-point favorites, and I don't really buy that. And so I think Buffalo can pull this out at home. At the very least, it's going to be a very close game, so I'll take the Bills.
Vin?
Yeah, I got the Bills, too. I like the Buffalo defense. And, Kyle Orton's a quarterback for the Bills now, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like that, but I still like the Bills' defense. I'll take the Bills plus 2. Like those home dogs, especially a home dog with a defense as good as Buffalo.
Kyle Orton's been one of the most effective quarterbacks in the league since he took over, though. So, granted that he's not really completing a lot of long passes downfield, but he's been decent.
Yeah, there's always an end of the line with Kyle Orton. It's just a matter of figuring out where it is.
Next up, Miami at Detroit. The Lions are 3-point favorites at home. Vin, Detroit's one of your teams. What do you think here?
Yeah, so Calvin Johnson coming back for this game, and that has to help. But this is going to be a close game. The Dolphins are a bit schizophrenic, but I think they're pretty good. I think the Lions offense is going to struggle a little bit at integrating back. They had some problems with the running game. Fourier's back at tight end, but Eric Ebron isn't. I think this Lions offense is going to struggle a little bit against the Dolphins defense. I'll take the Dolphins plus 3.
Dan?
I got the Dolphins. Lions offense struggles against everyone. So the Dolphins are just red hot right now. They got that offense clicking. I think Tannehill's finally figured out how to play in the new offense. I think they're running a lot more read option, which is really good because he's a great running quarterback. So I like Miami.
And I'm going to go with Detroit here. Next up, Pittsburgh at the New York Jets. I'll go first on this one because this is one that I actually think I feel like I know what I'm talking about a little bit. The Steelers have actually been playing really well. The Jets have not. I know this is a road game for the Steelers, but I think they could win this game by 10, 14, even 3 touchdowns. So I am going to take the Steelers here, even though 4.5 on the road is a fairly sizable number to cover. Dan?
Yeah, Steelers. The Jets are just miserable. I think they have Sims starting at quarterback. Vic could be starting. I'm not actually sure.
Yeah, they can't figure it out. I watched about a quarter and a half of that game last week, and it was they couldn't figure anything out.
It doesn't even matter anyway. I mean, the Steelers are humming along right now, and the Jets have so many problems on both sides of the ball that I like the Steelers.
Vin.
Yeah, make it unanimous. Steelers. It should be illegal to bet on the Jets at this point. Give me this.
What's funny is I bet real money on them when they played the Patriots and they covered. So there you go.
There you go.
Worth noting, Vin, that we are 5-2 in the last 2 weeks in our consensus picks, which brings us up to 21-18-1 on the season. Up $9.90 or 2.48% ROI, which is better than any of our individual performances. So that's worth noting. So that's our first consensus pick of the week. Next up, San Francisco at New Orleans. The Saints are 5-point favorites at home. Dan, this seems like a fairly big number between two competitive teams, or supposedly competitive teams.
Yeah, well, San Francisco is taking a turn for the worse, and New Orleans is riding a hot streak right now. New Orleans just doesn't lose at home, and so I'm going with the Saints because they're hot right now, and they're at home, and San Francisco is just really struggling. So that's basically the rationale for my pick.
Vin.
Even with San Francisco struggling, I like San Francisco to at least cover in this game. This is the type of team that gives New Orleans problems. I mean, even at home, New Orleans is playing well right now, but it's not like they've been humming along all season long. I'll take San Francisco +5. I just think it's a lot of points.
I agree, Vin. I think this is I think the best bet on the board actually here is the 49ers on the money line. You get it at +195. It's almost 2-1 on your money. I think they've got a 40% chance to win this game. So maybe even more. So I think 5 points is way too many. I'm going to go with San Francisco here. That being said, there's no reason why this can't turn out to be a 21-point blowout for the Saints. You never know. You never know with the NFL. Next up, Tennessee at Baltimore. Speaking of you never know, I don't think anyone thinks Tennessee is going to win this game. They're 9.5-point underdogs. I'm going to go with Baltimore here. Tennessee's a mess. Baltimore is a little schizophrenic, but they've had weeks where they've put up huge point totals. I think they're going to have another week where they put up a pretty big one here against Tennessee. So even though 9.5 is a big number, I will go with Baltimore here. Vin, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Tennessee because the number's big, and my sense of Baltimore, although I've been out of the country for 2-3 weeks, so it's hard to say, is that Baltimore plays at a level of its competition. And so that means they're going to have one of those schizophrenic things. I also like the better price on Tennessee. So I'll take Tennessee +9.5.
Dan.
It pains me because I bet against Baltimore's win total in the preseason. But I just don't see them. I just see them blowing Tennessee out in this game, coming off a loss, or coming off two straight losses, actually. So I'll take Baltimore.
Next up, Denver, coming off a huge thumping against the New England Patriots, head to Oakland to face the Raiders. The Broncos are 11-point favorites. Dan, are the Broncos going to be able to bounce back and cover this big number?
Yes. simple as that. They are going to win this game, and it's not going to be fun to be an Oakland Raider on Sunday, put it that way.
Vin.
Yeah, I like Denver. Denver crushes Oakland.
Yeah, I don't think Oakland's going to – they're not going to learn anything by watching last week's tape because they don't have the personnel to stop Denver. The Patriots did. This isn't going to be fair. Peyton Manning is going to have a field day. He's going to be so angry about what happened last week. He's going to take it out on the poor, hapless Oakland Raiders. Next up, the Giants head to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Seattle's a 9-point favorite, Vin, against our New York Giants. Is that number too big?
I think so. Look, Seattle hasn't been playing well. And the Giants aren't exactly setting the world on fire. The problem is the Giants have really only one good receiver going up against the Legion of Boom, and that's Odell Beckham. But he's been producing. I just feel like the number is too big. Do I think the Seahawks are going to win? Could this be a route? Yes. Garbage time touchdown, Giants cover. I'll take the Giants +9.
I'm with you here too, Vin. I think the Giants are I think the number's too big. The Seattle offense has not been playing particularly well. I think the Giants get 10, 13 points here, and I don't see Seattle scoring more than 21. So if they get 13 points, then I think they're going to cover. So I'll take the Giants. Dan, what do you think?
Are we watching the same Giants team?
Oh, they're horrible. I'm not trying to make a case that they're good. But all I'm saying is the Giants need to score 13 points to cover. I think they'll score 13 points.
I don't. I don't think they'll come anywhere close to scoring 13 points. I like the Seahawks here. I think this is one of the easier picks on the board, honestly. But we'll see what happens.
Next up, I'll put it to you this way. I'm not putting money on this game myself, even if I'm going to get to Vegas in time to actually do it. Next up, St. Louis at Arizona. The Cardinals are 7-point favorites at home. I'll go first here. The Cardinals are playing really well. I actually got to see some of the game against the Cowboys. And I know the Cowboys obviously didn't have Tony Romo, which really crippled their offense. But it's the first chance I'd had to see Arizona this year, and they looked solid. St. Louis is not good. I'm going to take the Cardinals here to cover. Dan.
St. Louis. I think Arizona's been one of the more overrated teams in the league this year, even though they've played pretty well, but they won all their games by, I think, 11 points or less. And St. Louis has now beaten San Francisco. They've beaten Seattle. They've been competitive in another game against San Francisco, and they've been competitive against both Dallas and Philadelphia. They'll cover 7 points against Arizona.
Vin.
Yeah, this line feels too big. I mean, I think Arizona's good, but I think St. Louis is underappreciated. I'll take St. Louis +7. Plus, I like the price on St. Louis as well.
Yeah, so you get St. Louis at -105 and Arizona at -115. So I'm on the wrong side of that. But anyway, next up, Chicago at Green Bay in the Sunday night game. The Packers are 7-point favorites at home. Dan, what do you think?
I'm going with the Bears. I know the Packers embarrassed Chicago last time these two teams played in Chicago, but, you know, this is one of the, like, Chicago is, this is their season right now, and I just think primetime game, they're going to be giving it all they got. As cliched as all that sounds, I like the Bears. They have too many skill players on offense.
So Chicago, which normally does not give it all that it has, will this week, according to Dan. Vin.
I like the Bears coming off a bye week. Mark Trestman, the Bears coach, is under fire. They're looking, they're doing some self-scouting, trying to break some tendencies. They've had an extra week to prepare for Green Bay. I like the Bears. I think this is going to end up being a close game, and you get a better price with the Bears as well, so I'll take Chicago.
I will take the Packers, doing my best to make sure that we keep our consensus picks above 500. We're 3 games over 500, and we have 2 consensus picks so far this week, which unless something happens in this last game, we will still be above 500 on the season. Carolina at Philadelphia in the Monday night game. Oh, and also worth mentioning, Dallas at Jacksonville is off the board, I'm assuming, because of the Tony Romo situation. Next up, Carolina at Philadelphia in the Monday night game. Philadelphia is a 6-point favorite. I'll go first here. I'll be honest, I don't know a whole lot about either of those teams, but I know the Eagles have had some big point out, some big point totals in the past this season, so I am going to go for the Eagles. Vin, what do you think?
Yeah, I like the Eagles. I think the offensive line is starting to get a little healthier. I think even with Mark Sanchez at quarterback, they're going to put up a lot of points. And Carolina's been struggling, and they've been struggling to score. Their defense has struggled at times. When you're struggling, you don't want to play the Eagles. I'll take the Eagles, -6.5.
Uh-oh. Dan.
Welcome to the Sanchez, baby.
No fumbles here, huh?
The Mark Sanchez era is upon us. Embrace the Sanchez.
Well, that makes it 3 consensus picks on the week, so we better not go 0-3 or else we're going to dip below, or we're going to dip to 500 on the season on our consensus picks, and we need to make sure we stay above 500 to retain any sort of credibility as football handicappers. And that should never appear anywhere near my name. But that's just about it for this week's show. Guys, anything you want to mention before we head into the weekend?
Michigan State, Ohio State, Saturday night, big game. Winner gets keeps their chances alive for the NCAA playoffs. Loser will be on the outside looking in. So it should be fun.
Dan, anything our listeners should know about?
Big first anniversary coming up this weekend. It's the paper anniversary, I guess. That's what I've been told. Aaron sort of informed me as to what that means yesterday, so now I am prepared.
Aaron doing his best to make sure the Pottheiser marriage stays happy.
I'm here to mentor him not only professionally, but also as a young married person.
I just assumed Ashley wanted me to get her cash for her, the anniversary. So that when she said paper, I was like, okay, how much do you need?
That's outstanding.
Let's see how I do in the Millionaire Maker this weekend.
You know what you should do, Dan? If you want to do cash, go and, as everyone knows, I'm a big fan of $1 bills, as evidenced by the fact that I paid out the winner of our the last WSOP satellite that my poker game had with $2,000 in ones. You should get her $365 in ones to celebrate your first 365 days together. That would be pretty creative.
Can we make it like, I don't know.
$3.65.
Yeah, that's I don't know what kind of budget you think I'm dealing with here, but that's not earmarked on this year's budget.
Well, you can take it back. You can just give it to her and then be like, I need to go put this back in the bank because this is our money, but I just thought you'd like to see it.
Yeah, no, I ended up going with couple of magazine subscriptions, which I think is pretty great.
Well, you know, she's going to listen to this. You're going to give it away.
She doesn't know which magazines, though, so.
No.
Is she still listening to the podcast, Dan?
All right, Ashley, be really. You have to act like you're really happy when Playgirl magazine arrives.
I should have thought of that.
Dan, if Ashley's still listening to the podcast, that's true love. That's that right there.
She stopped listening week one.
Oh, Lord. Well, I want to point out that for those of you who have been longtime listeners of the show, you probably know that I've been a big fan of the ChipTalk.net forum. As of, I don't know when, it's not officially dead, but that forum is really kind of falling apart. It's unfortunate the owner has kind of let things go and nothing really works at that forum anymore. So everyone has kind of picked up and moved over to pokerchipforum.com. So I'm looking forward to getting to know some of the members who have existed there in the past and reconnecting with all the people that I've connected with at Chip Talk. It's pretty funny though, because some of the longtime threads that were at Chip Talk have essentially just picked up and moved to this other site. Things are pretty much the same. The dominant personalities at Chip Talk are still pretty dominant personalities at Poker Chip Forum. So if you're looking for a place to go discuss poker chips and look for ideas in terms of custom sets and things like that, that would be a good resource for you to check out, and so I would encourage you to do that. And the community so far, from what I've seen, is pretty welcoming, and it's pretty entertaining as well.
Proof that there is an online community for everything.
Has your hunt for clay chips manufactured in China died down?
Well, no, I got a set of ceramics. That's completely suit my needs now. So I probably won't be getting anything unless and until I decide to get like a custom clay set from a U.S. manufacturer that will it's formerly ASM. I can't remember what they're called now, but there's a company that does an amazing job. And if I someday am willing to put up the $3,000 to $5,000 to put together the custom set that I would like, then I will do that. But that seems highly unlikely that would ever happen.
Yeah,
so
you're married, right? So.
Yeah. Well, beyond that, I don't have that kind of money just sitting around to throw at poker chips that I don't particularly need. It seems unlikely that'll happen unless, you know, suddenly I win my way into a WSOP event and get a six-figure cash, and then I might consider it. But anyway, so I encourage people to go to pokerchipforum.com, check out the site, and if you're looking for custom chips, then that's a good place to go to do a great deal of research and learn as much as you can. That, and I'm looking forward to the November 9 next week. I'm really excited to be able to go to the Poker Hall of Fame induction again. I probably will have some sort of top 10 related to that event on Monday, so you can check that out at CasinoCityTimes.com. And, of course, be watching for our coverage of the complete November 9 from start to finish. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Casino City Gang. Thanks for joining us, and please join us each and every week, Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Next week, I believe we might be moving the show to Wednesday. Stay tuned. Go to blogtalkradio.com if you want to try and search for us and see if you want to listen to our sort of November 9 post-mortem. But I'm going to be traveling all day on Thursday, so we probably can't do the podcast then. But that's going to do it for this week.
The show will be on Wednesday.
Yeah,
there's no belief. The show will be on Wednesday next week. Stay tuned, folks.
But that's going to do it for this week. Please join us next week. And as always, thanks for listening. The music for the Casino City Gang is provided by the PodSafe Music Network. This show is for entertainment purposes only and does not endorse any illegal gambling. Please be sure gambling is legal in your jurisdiction before placing any wagers.